Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez is toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
It is time for our first base preview. Oh, this position was a huge disappointment last year, and that was a big surprise. This is usually a position we can rely on for batting average, power, RBIs, run score, just great hitters. Wasn't really the case last season. Recording this on Friday, February 15th. I thought I would publish this on Monday, but yeah, what's the point? Saturday's a day also, so I'm going to publish this on Saturday. I am Adam Azer with Scott White, Heath Cummings, and Chris Towers. Was last year an anomaly, guys, or is first base just not that good anymore?
Anomaly.
I think so.
I'm not sure. There aren't a lot of prospects, first base prospects in the pipeline. There aren't a lot of players who appear to be on the verge of outgrowing other positions and having to move over to first base. I think we've seen less of that in general in recent years, which is why we've arrived at this state. We keep counting on the same four at the top of the rankings who are, you know, getting up there in years. And I think they'll bounce back. But yeah, there's a lack of depth in the middle.
Yeah, and with Votto having a down year, with Miguel Cabrera really having two very bad years in a row, with Edwin Encarnacion starting to show some signs, the position has certainly gotten older. And which first baseman do you guys find yourselves drafting a lot as you've done some early drafts? Remember, it's only February 15th. Things will change. But who's on a lot of your teams so far?
Well, the first baseman who's on the most of my teams, I'm going to save for sleepers. On the higher end, somebody I found myself drafting quite a bit. I think it's ideal in position scarcity terms to take Goldschmidt with a second round pick. I've also been drafting Jose Abreu a lot, another first baseman coming off a down year. If I miss out on Goldschmidt, that's usually my go-to.
Yeah, he's not coming off a down year, but I have taken a lot of Matt Carpenter because he's kind of being drafted like he didn't do what he did last year.
I've been drafting a lot of Cody Bellinger. I think a breakout is coming. I think he can absolutely be one of the guys who makes first base look like a better position this time next year.
Cody Bellinger, Matt Carpenter, Joey Votto, Anthony Rizzo, they all have something in common. They all have something that makes first base a little bit difficult and hitting in general. They had either last year or in 2017 very bad seasons against lefties. And I think it really has impacted their numbers. Anthony Rizzo had a 684 OPS against lefties last year. That was his first year in five seasons with an OPS lower than 832. Joey Votto struggled against lefties. Matt Carpenter bounced back against lefties, but he was really bad in 2017, and that was a bad stat for him. And I think Cody Bellinger's success will come down to how he hits against lefties. Because in his rookie year, Bellinger had a 903 OPS against lefties. Last year, 681. And if you go back to his minor leagues, it was up and down. Sometimes he was good against southpaw. Sometimes Bellinger was bad. And I mentioned this on a podcast a few weeks ago. 2 years in a row, the Dodgers and most of the NL West have been among the league leaders in at-bats against left-handed pitchers. So he's probably going to see a lot of them. And if he hits lefties well, Bellinger's going to probably give you really nice value. He is going, although he's going a little, no, he's not going to give you nice value. He's going 43rd overall.
If he plays consistently against lefties, which it sounds like that's what the Dodgers have want to do. Dave Roberts has said they're going to platoon less this year, though he cited that was mostly because of Corey Seager and AJ Pollock. But down the stretch, Bellinger was basically only starting against righties, which we've talked about it a lot with Max Muncy. It might be just as much of a concern for Bellinger.
I don't think it is. If you actually look at his career numbers, I mean, he has a 782 career OPS against lefties. It's only 193 plate appearances, so the fact that it's been up and down shouldn't be too surprising.
And it's always a small sample when you're dealing with numbers against left-handed pitchers.
But the thing that's really promising is when you dig into the batted ball data, he has very little difference between how he hits lefties and righties. He doesn't strike out that much more against lefties. He hits the ball really hard against lefties.
Is he shifted? Is it just shifting, maybe?
I think it might be a fluke. My concern is just, is that how the Dodgers are going to approach it? Because Yeah. They stopped playing him against lefties last year. Yeah, they just love platoons for whatever reason.
I would bank on the career number being more indicative, even if it's a small sample size, than the even smaller sample size of last year.
All right, well, Bellinger is 7th or 8th in the rankings for Heath and Scott. So, you know, yesterday we talked about catchers, how many startable catchers are there. And we basically came up with like a top 8, which was guys like Salvador Perez, Wilson Ramos, Buster Posey, and some more obvious names. And then there were a couple fallback options like Danny Jansen and Francisco Mejia. And then, you know, after that, maybe one or two more guys. Then it got pretty bad. But what's the number of first basemen that you feel comfortable with as your starter at first?
Okay, starter at first. Okay.
I think it really depends on format and whether we're talking opening day or 1 week after opening day. Because we're going to have some guys that become first baseman that's going to make this position look a lot better than it currently does.
That's Reese Hoskins.
And Daniel Murphy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Though probably Daniel, but second base is even shallower, so probably Murphy would be drafted to play second.
But those two guys would easily be, what, top 10 guys in either format?
Presuming good health, yes. Carlos Santana is a very trustworthy option in points leagues.
Right.
Not somebody you want as your first baseman in standard 5x5. So and Joey Gallo, I don't think I'd want as my starter in a points league, but I'd be fine with him in Roto. So it kind of breaks down to 12 either way for me, where I can live with them as my starter. But that includes some that I have concerns about, like Jesus Aguilar, Edwin Encarnacion. I mean, in theory, they're great starters, but it seems like they could both fall short of expectations.
But there's a lot of guys after those top 12 that are fine if you're really strong everywhere else. It's not like catcher where it drops off and they might actually hurt you. There's a lot of guys that are just fine.
Okay, and we're talking about Matt Olson, Miguel Cabrera. Okay, there'll be some disagreement about these players, but Jurickson Profar, Jose Martinez, Max Muncy, etc.
I think Max Muncy is a top 12 guy.
I think there's probably – I could go 14 deep before I really, and it's not going to be the same order as either you guys have them, but there are probably 14 or 15 first basemen that, depending on how the draft went, I could live with as my starter. And the thing about first base, and I'm sure we'll get to it eventually, but it probably goes down to like 35 of guys where you could see yourself starting them in a corner infield or utility spot.
Right. Right, you play in a deep league, you play in AL, NL only. It becomes deep toward the bottom of the serviceable options.
Right.
So it's to say it's a shallow position, I don't think is entirely accurate, but it's very like bottom heavy. Is that the same thing? I don't think so.
No. It's deep in that respect, deep in terms of startable players.
Yeah.
You're talking about guys like Josh Bell, Yuli Gurriel, those kind of players.
Yeah, but it's right. You know, you can get an advantage at a clear advantage at the position in a standard mixed league pretty easily because there are clear drop offs on the way to that range of first baseman.
All right, so let me go through some statistics and just to give a little bit of context and some color to the position here. Freddie Freeman was the number one first baseman last year in both points and Roto. He was the number 12 hitter in points leagues, number 17 in Roto. He scored 538 fantasy points. That was 100 points fewer than Joey Votto the year before when Votto was the number one first baseman. It was a great year for Votto, though. The 538 fantasy points that Freddie Freeman scored are the fewest for a number one first baseman since Miguel Cabrera in 2014. Freeman actually scored more fantasy points in 2016 than he did in 2018. And he was only number 6 in 2016 among first basemen. Last year, 7 first base eligible players hit 30 or more home runs. In 2017, 14 hit 30 or more home runs. And in 2016, 12 did it. So that's just a little bit of context about how the position really struggled last year. Let's talk about Freddie Freeman. Right now, he is going 22nd overall. He's actually the second first baseman off the board behind Paul Goldschmidt. I am really excited about Freddie Freeman. I feel like
me too.
Yeah, right. Like Scott, who isn't excited about Freddie?
Chris
Freeman?
And Scott. Team it, Scott.
It's tough. So we saw Freddie Freeman make the leap to the legitimate elite level tier. He was one of the five to seven best hitters in baseball from 2016. To basically when he broke his wrist in 2017.
Yeah, we didn't get a chance to fully savor it because he kept getting hurt. But yeah.
And then since that broken wrist in 2017, he's kind of reverted back to the 2013 to 2015 version. And maybe he needed a full season to get back to health. That's not out of the question. You saw when Giancarlo Stanton broke his hand a couple years ago. He wasn't the same guy the immediate year afterwards, but then he had 58 home runs the following year. So that's possible, but most of his career, it comes down to the home run power. He's always hit a ton of doubles, but basically it's 23 home runs or fewer every year except for 2016 and the first half of 2017.
The previous 2 years where he was great, where he was legitimately first round caliber with the power and everything, the fly ball rate was as high as it's ever been for him. And last year it took a step back to where it was earlier in his career, especially in the second half. Only 7 home runs in the second half with a fly ball rate sub 30%. So that's kind of like an Eric Hosmer thing going on there with the power. Now I think he's much better than Eric Hosmer because his line drive rate, how hard he hits the ball, is ridiculous. But I'm not counting on more than 25 homers from even a healthy Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, and see the thing for me with that fly ball rate is that all those fly balls turned into line drives last year. I get worried about when fly balls turn into ground balls, but the difference between a fly ball and a line drive is so minuscule, and the odds of him having a 32% line drive rate again are pretty slim. So I would expect more fly balls, and he had a hard contact rate over 40% and saw his home run to fly ball rate go down from 19.9 the two previous years to 14.9%. So I just more think that 2016, 2017 is closer to what we should expect in terms of power than 2018. And he has been awesome at everything else. He even stole more bases than Paul Goldschmidt last year.
Yeah, that's the thing. He might give you 10 steals. He gave you 10 last year. He gave you, I think, 7 the year before, and he missed some time. So Freeman does that. Freeman's better in a points league because of the doubles. I mean, he's a doubles machine, and he walks a ton. But that's not to say he's not great in Roto. But last year he was a number 12 hitter in points leagues, number 17 in Roto. And I think with Freeman and with Anthony Rizzo, they're both better in points leagues. Rizzo had a down year last year, but he was still the number 21 overall hitter in points leagues, number 36 in Roto. He basically walks as much as he strikes out. So that's
wonder if Goldschmidt's going to be better in points leagues this year than he is in Roto.
Cause the steals, can't really count on Goldschmidt for steals anymore. He's had like 12 steals in 250 games or something like that. I have the 13 steals in his last 205 games since the 2017 All-Star break.
But we don't know. I mean, you shouldn't draft Goldschmidt expecting steals at this point. But he is on a new team now that may have a different philosophy in terms of how often they let him run. So there's, at least we know he has the capacity for 20 steals that none of these other guys do. I do think there's a big difference between Freeman and Rizzo with regard to format, because Freeman is one of the most reliable sources of batting average in baseball, going to be at over or near 300. And Rizzo probably isn't going to help you too much in batting average. He makes up for it a lot with a good walk to strikeout ratio in points leagues. But I don't even think at his best he's a first round type bat in standard Roto.
Yeah, I totally agree. However, if you replace batting average with OBP, Rizzo is very good there. He's not like Votto good, but he's between 376 and 392 five straight seasons in on base percentage. And as also Freeman very good there as well. All right, just a few more stats. Paul Goldschmidt hit just 238 at home last year. With the humidor. Usually he was amazing at home. He was great both home road, but struggled at home last year. Career at Busch Stadium, 890 OPS. That's nice. Edwin Encarnacion now has 7 straight seasons with 32 or more home runs and 98 or more RBIs. And he has a 966 career OPS at Safeco. So it was just, it doesn't seem like Encarnacion had that good of a year last year, but 32 home runs and 107 RBIs, number 10 in points, number 6 in Roto.
If we're comparing him to himself, he didn't have a great year.
When you're as good as he's been for the last, 7 years, you can go a long way before you're not good.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm afraid he may be nearing the breaking point, though. He's 36 years old, and the last couple years, his plate discipline numbers, which were part of what really set him apart during his Blue Jays days in points leagues, where sometimes he was competing for the top overall hitter in fantasy. But those plate discipline numbers have started to go badly. And last year was the most drastic difference. Worst ever strikeout rate, except maybe at the very start of his career, and worst walk rate since then, too.
Joey Votto had a bad year, but he had a career-high 41% hard contact rate. He had a Freeman-like year where he hit 31.4% line drives. I mean, that's unbelievable. And a 9.5% home run to fly ball rate, less than half of what his home run to fly ball rate had been each of the previous three seasons. Votto hit 12 home runs. So the batted ball numbers for Votto, were they encouraging or discouraging last year? Is he had a really down season?
We talk about line drive rate and how it kind of bounces around a little bit. The thing that concerns me with Joey Votto last year is that he is one of the few hitters in baseball that I feel like can kind of determine that. Like, he has so much control over what he does at the plate. And his approach just did not seem to be power focused at all last year.
But he
could change that this year. He's changed it midseason before.
Yeah, he acknowledged it, I think, around August. I tried to find the exact article, but he said he made some changes expecting his skills to diminish more than they actually did. And September was like his best power month of the season.
So annoying.
It's kind of, I made the joke with Trevor Bauer that he could tinker himself his way out of Cy Young contention. That might be what happened to Joey Votto. He also might have just been a little unlucky. According to the Baseball Savant stats, he was still a top 10 hitter in expected outcomes, if not actual outcomes.
This is Chris's new pet stat.
Yeah, yeah.
In case it's not clear.
two more
no,
stats.
It's fine. I mean, it's interesting because it seems to be drastically different from what a lot of the evaluation methods we've been using would suggest.
I think it's just a little more refined.
All right, yeah, two more stats, guys. Two more stats, whatever. Ian Desmond led all first base eligible players with 20 steals last year. Cody Bellinger was second with 14. And Jurickson Profar had a 712 OPS on the road last year with the Rangers. And now he is with Oakland. 712 OPS on the road. I know we're going to talk more about Profar later. Scott's very high on him. I assume that will be Scott's sleeper.
Profar to not talk too much about.
Heath is very high on him, too.
I have him higher than I feel comfortable
it's
with.
It's only one spot behind Scott in first base.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Chris is going to lay into us both with his baseball savant expected outcomes.
Again, and I think Chris and I had this discussion back when Chris had rankings. But I have gone to the try to keep my rankings the same across all positions.
And I think that's the right way to go.
And so his second base eligibility, which he's going to have a week into the season, makes him – I don't think he's going to outperform a lot of guys I have him ranked ahead of, but he's more valuable because he's going to be second base eligible.
I just think there's a chance he's not good.
He's going to be eligible at every infield spot.
I also think there's a chance he's not good. I'm very nervous about Profar. I can make an argument that he's going to be very good this year. I can make an argument that he's useless.
Yeah, well, I think there's a chance he's not good either, because he's going to a really tough park and he doesn't have much of a track record. But if you're just assessing him by what he did last year, I think he actually had bad luck.
Okay, more on Profar later. And yes, Profar will be first base, third base, and shortstop eligible to start the year. And then he will be second base eligible. And that's a big deal. That really helps. Some overall first base questions, some sleepers, breakouts, and busts. And then we'll get into a complete average draft position review. And we'll be back right after this.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Okay, what's your overall first base strategy if we haven't covered that yet?
I am kind of back on board with position scarcity this year and the positions where I'm most elevating because of it are second base and first base. So as I said earlier, like the ideal way to start a draft to me, if you don't have one of the top three picks and have to, you know, take Trout, Betts, or Ramirez, because you have to. My ideal way to start a draft is Altuve 1 and Goldschmidt 2. Obviously, I can't control what everybody else does, so it doesn't always happen. I like to get what I consider a pretty safe first baseman, though, if that doesn't happen, which is why I end up drafting Jose Abreu a lot, because there's not much reason looking at the batted ball data to think he's on the decline, even though last year's numbers were disappointing. And he had been very reliable before that.
Keith, Chris, overall first-base strategies?
I'm fine with drafting Goldschmidt or Freeman in the second round, but I'm a little wary of paying a premium for what probably won't be elite overall production just because first base looks shallower right now, because if Joey Votto has the bounce back that I expect him to have, if Cody Bellinger takes the step forward, I expect the position isn't quite as shallow as I think we might be treating it right now. And that's why I just, when we talk about first base being kind of shallow, we're fighting last year's battle, you know, like we're reacting to last year's numbers, and we have to do that to a certain extent, but yeah, this is just a 1 year thing. And the long-term trend is that first base is always going to have guys who hit 30 home runs and hit 270, 280. Like, those guys will be there.
Well, where do you see them coming from? I mean, because we mentioned Murphy, we mentioned Hoskins, but like I said, Murphy's probably going to be a second baseman for somebody.
I think there are a lot of youngish guys who could be better this year than we have. Like, Bellinger's one of them. Max Muncy's one of them.
Olsen?
I think we haven't seen the best of Joey Gallo. Olsen is one of them. You know, I can't go through a first base preview without saying Jake Bowers.
If Jose Martinez somehow stumbles into everyday playing time.
Yeah, but he basically was an everyday player last year, and he was kind of fringy in mixed leagues, Jose Martinez.
He missed a lot. He didn't accrue the plate appearances that a lot of guys did, and he wasn't that, like,
he was usable, but he was fringy.
He was kind of a poor man's Freddie Freeman.
It's
on a per plate appearance basis.
It's the old dilemma of, this guy is good enough to start, therefore I'm okay at the position, versus this is a true standout, therefore I'm getting an advantage over my competition.
And that's the thing, is I don't think Goldschmidt and Freeman are actually standouts. Like Adam said, based on historical first base production, they were pretty run of the mill.
Well, where did Goldschmidt finish in overall hitters in total points last year, if we want to use that?
I will tell you, he was 20th.
Wasn't the number one first baseman.
Yeah, but he's going in the second round as the 20th overall hitter last year. That seems fair.
And he got off to a terrible start. First 48 games for Goldschmidt, he had a 198 batting average. .355 slugging percentage. Last 110 games, he was elite. He had an OPS over 1,000.
I don't know if this is so much my first base strategy, but it's something that almost always happens. So I guess it kind of is. I almost always draft at least two of these first basemen because so many of them are eligible at other positions. And I want to have, I think a lot of them are better at the other position. So I don't think first base necessarily is that.
I've drafted Cody Bellinger as an outfielder several times.
I've drafted Joey Gallo as an outfielder, or Jake Bauer as my last outfielder, or Jerickson Profar as my third, short, second, whatever.
So I personally think that your first base strategy is probably going to depend on if you have confidence in Rizzo, Votto, and Abreu, probably, to bounce back, and Bellinger, I guess, to bounce back, because it was a down year. So you have to decide who you like, because they're all pretty much values, except I don't think Bellinger's really discounted. He's 43rd overall in ADP. Mm-hmm. Votto's round 6. Jose Abreu's round 7. So if you like those guys to bounce back, Matt Olson is round 9, then you can wait at first base. It's up to you decide.
The first six first basemen off the board last year, which were in some order Goldschmidt, Freeman, Rizzo, Votto, Abreu, and Bellinger, they all performed below expectations. Goldschmidt came the closest, probably. But
Freeman came the closest. Freeman was better.
And he was drafted
behind. Yeah, okay, Freeman came. I mean, his OPS dropped 100 points, but fine. He had a pretty good year, but it wasn't the year you drafted him to be. For the most part, I have confidence in all of them bouncing back. The one I have the least confidence of that group is Bellinger, because there's just not enough of a track record there for me to know if he's going to be one of the best home run to fly ball guys or not. And there's the playing time concern. So it's like, if there's anybody, and the fact that he's not really being discounted is like, I'm probably not going to have any shares of Bellinger this year.
All right, let's do an impromptu segment and keep going with this, because let's talk about whether these guys can bounce back. Scott says the one he's least confident in is Bellinger. Chris obviously does not feel that way. I would say that I would be thrilled to get Joey Votto in a points or OBP league in round 6, and I've been taking him in round 5. If it's a standard 5x5 league with batting average, where Votto's always, very good, but I guess just with his age, I trust that less than OBP and, in walks. I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is I have a little bit of concern about Votto in a standard 5x5 league, whereas I am all about drafting him as often as I can right now in a points league or an OBP league. How do you guys feel about Votto?
I actually haven't really drafted him that much this year, probably because Adam takes him every time. But I'm very optimistic. I think there's a very good chance that we're looking at this next year and Joey Votto's coming off a number one first baseman season, number one overall.
Ooh. Yeah. He's old, but it's not like what sent his numbers askew was anything that you would say, okay, this guy's skills are diminishing. He just didn't elevate as much. And to the point Heath was making earlier, it manifested more as line drives than ground balls. So that seems like just a very small tweak away for a guy who's great at understanding his own abilities and making the necessary tweaks. It's just a small tweak away from getting back to MVP caliber production.
And to that point, he had the lowest ground ball percentage of his career.
And he scored 67 runs with a .417 on base percentage. I know he missed sometimes, played 145 games, but that is absolutely ridiculous.
Crazy. Yeah, that is. And I haven't noticed that.
And
that's
we
crazy.
Think that could be one of the better lineups in the National League.
Yeah, and he's probably going to be at second or third. Yeah. So he's going to be in position to be driven in a lot.
Yeah, his OBP, Votto's OBP was .417. His slugging was .419. That's a weird slash line. Okay, but he did have those struggles against lefties, which is, I think, giving me a little bit of pause if it's just a batting average league. You're not directly getting rewarded for any walks with Votto. Jose Abreu. So I have an issue with Jose Abreu because he's kind of up and down in terms of where he finishes among first basemen. In points leagues in 5 years, he's been 3rd, 9th, 11th, 4th, and 19th. In Roto, he's been 1st, 6th, 15th, 3rd, and 17th. Last year he missed time. He played 128 games. He had testicular torsion. He said his testicle was being strangled. So just everybody chew on that for a second.
Chris and I just made the same face.
Did you say just chew on that for a minute?
Yeah, I should have said that.
Please don't.
Yeah, don't do that. Think about that.
Grow up, people.
What does Jose Abreu...
This is an adult podcast. We're all adults here. We're three of us are fathers. We've got a grandfather. Please try to be adults here.
We have a draft today, and I'm pretty sure my team name is now going to be testicular torsion.
And mine's going to be bag of tools to go from Thursday's show. Does Jose Abreu, do you think he's a 290, 30 homer, 100 RBI guy?
I'm not totally sure on the 30 homers, but 290, yes, he'd been, before last year, a very consistent source of that. And, probably approach 100 RBI.
The one thing is he is older than you probably think.
He's 32.
Already 32.
32.
And basically Paul Goldschmidt's age, right?
Right. And it might have just been the start of the end. Like, if we're... You know, that's possible.
It might have been, but I feel like you'd see a rise in strikeout rate. You'd see the quality of contact numbers suffer more. And remember also, he had health issues last year.
Which can be the other side of the injury.
He didn't have health issues. He had a fluky testicular torsion. He did not have hamstring injuries.
He needed surgery before the end of last season, and I think he came back.
He did, but at the end, on right? his testicle. Like, sorry to right. keep saying
no,
the
I'm
word.
Saying, I'm saying that probably impacted his performance.
Yeah.
As well,
maybe. I don't know what led up to. I don't know if he was dealing with it for a while. I don't think he was. I think it was like, oh my god.
I've had so many things that I cannot say.
But I think there was something even before that too. I can't remember what it was. I'd have to look.
Okay, that I didn't see. Yeah. All right, Heath, how do you feel about Cody Bellinger? I want to get your thoughts on that. He ended up last year actually a top seven first baseman.
I think Jose Abreu also had an adductor strain, right?
Or was that the same thing, and were they using that as a euphemism?
I think it was part of it. Looking at inside injuries, he had a grade 3 strain of a core muscle, so that's...
Okay, yeah, I thought...
Okay.
I thought he had, like, core muscle surgery or something, but then...
It's part of your core, you know.
The testicular torsion or whatever.
The greatest thing would be that if Adam just totally made up this testicular torsion thing.
I don't think I did.
Torsion? Was it torsion? I thought it was torsion.
Yeah, torsion. All right, I'm going to Google it.
Dr. Mike Tanner will tell us.
Jose Abreu testicular. Oh, nothing's coming up right now, so I'm nervous about this. article.
Adam, you're right.
Yeah, the doctors, they did a very good job. They saved the testicle. All right, Heath, how do you feel about Cody Bellinger?
I think there's still some upside there. I like the power. We all should have expected his home run rate to fall a little bit last year. But he still makes elite contact. He made an improvement in his plate discipline last year, struck out less than 24% of the time. So I still think he has the possibility, especially with his stolen bases, to be a top five first baseman.
Okay, and yeah, whether or not he'll play against lefties will be a big deal for Cody Bellinger. He was top seven at first base last year. Anytime you hear, like, he was top this, whatever, just, I don't know, knock it down, like, five spots in a normal first base year. And Bellinger was 18th in points, 22nd in roto at outfield.
And there are some reasons to be concerned. His infield fly, his pop-up rate.
Pop-up rate.
Yelled at for not saying pop-ups.
hey, who?
Adam.
I got an email.
No, we got one email that was right on. It's like, they're called pop-ups. They're not infield fly balls.
But a pop-up can go to the outfield, and it's not the same thing.
All right, whatever.
No, it's not a pop-up anymore once it goes to the outfield.
Yeah, it is.
Unless the shortstop runs way back there and catches it, and then it's still in the
infield. I definitely heard anyway, his pop-up rate.
His cans of corn.
That's definitely in the outfield.
The problem is it's pop-ups per fly ball, but anyway.
And they have to stay inside the base pads?
Look, we've talked. No, moving on. let's do sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Who's your favorite first base sleeper?
I will go with the guy I've drafted, I think, in every single mock we've done so far. And that's Luke Voit. Now, I would not be so enthusiastic about him if I wasn't consistently getting him in round 16 or later, but I think there's basically no risk at that point. And what he did after joining the Yankees last season was obviously very impressive. Do I think he can sustain anywhere close to that home run pace? Of course not. But his swing does seem geared toward hitting fly balls to right field, which would make him a great fit for that park. It's probably the best park for him. And beyond even the power production, I mean, this is a guy who I understand he doesn't have a lot of major league experience, but even looking at his minor league numbers, very high line drive rates. He looks like somebody who profiles for a high BABIP. So he could be both a power and batting average source. If he plays every day for the Yankees, which to me is the biggest question, do they really trust him as their permanent option there?
And can he beat out Greg Bird?
You laugh about that, but
Brian Cashman loves him some Greg Bird.
Better prospect than Gary Sanchez.
Shut up.
If he can, I think 30 home runs is a reasonable expectation, and without hurting you in batting average. So that, I mean, what is that at first base? That's probably top 10, right?
And Luke Voit was actually better on the road last year, so he was not just a product of Yankee Stadium. Heath, your sleeper.
You know who I'm going to say. Everyone knows who I'm going to say. I'll say Jake Bowers. And Chris hates Jake Bowers, and he did strike out way too much, was awful, awful, awful in the last month and a half of the season. Had a lot of trouble hitting lefties, and the strikeouts and the hitting lefties were both weird because he didn't have trouble hitting lefties in AA or AAA, and he didn't, or in AAA over 2 years, and he didn't have strikeout problems at all. In fact, had a 16% strikeout rate. Him not striking out was supposed to be one of his strengths. So I'm just going to trust, especially at his cost. You can get him in the last round or the next to last round of the draft. I'll probably get him for a dollar today in today's draft unless Scott just trolls me. I think in that offense with Lindor, Jose Ramirez, Carlos Santana in front of him, he's got a chance to hit 25 to 30 home runs and drive in 80 to 90 runs.
Okay. I was trying to cue up the Bowers clip from Little Big League, but I ran out of time. So, Chris, who's your sleeper?
Let's go with someone who's being drafted after Josh Bowers and has some success in the major league
Josh
level.
Bowers.
Jake Bowers. Jake Bowers.
Josh Bell was like, it looked like things clicked for him in the second half. In the offseason, he talked about reworking his swing. He was going to be a fly ball revolution guy, and it looked like him. It messed him up in the first half, but all of a sudden in the second half of the season, the fly ball rate starts inching up a little bit. The infield fly ball rate goes in, basically cuts in half. The home run to fly ball rate basically triples, and it's all in line with a hard hit rate that continued to improve. He doesn't really have like major platoon issues. He actually walks against lefties, doesn't strike out that much.
There's one split that concerns me. He has not been good at home in either 2017 or
it's a bad park.
It's a tough park to hit in, and that could hold him back, but if the skill set, like if he's a little worse at home but becomes an 860 OPS bat on the road, and he was already an 830 OPS bat, you know, if he continues to make improvements, I think there's definitely top 15, top 12 first base upside.
Remember that home run he hit, Scott?
Oh my gosh.
It's Josh Bell.
That was one of the best home runs I've ever seen. That guy, I mean, shirtless, he looks like the super shredder at the end of Secret of the Ooze.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have no idea what the home run, the reference, I don't understand.
I get the
reference of what just happened.
Good job, Scott. All right, that's Josh Bell. So Scott says Luke Voit. Heath says Jake Bowers. Scott says, or Chris says Josh Bell as sleepers. Let's do breakouts, and let's go a little faster, guys. I want to get to ADP. There are a lot of people to talk about. Breakout first baseman, Heath.
Joey Gallo. He got 50 homer potential. I think there's a better chance that he stays in the middle of the order this year just because they got rid of some of their better hitters. And so that should help him in terms of plate appearances and RBI. And gosh darn it, he should be a 225 hitter.
Okay, and he hit 206 last year with 40 homers, and he was 14th in points, 10th in roto at first. So he's always going to be better in roto.
Kind of looked like he sold out less for power in the second half, and he did hit, I think, about 230. So if he can sustain that,
But the
and
problem
he was on a
50
homer pace. Like, there's no reason he needs to sell out for power as drastically as he does.
But in 2000, okay, so Gallo hit 239 after the All-Star break with 1.36 strikeouts per game. 2017 after the All-Star break, he hit 229 with 1.31 strikeouts per game. So I feel like we had the same conversation a year ago about what Gallo did second half.
But he's still young enough that I still have hope it'll stick one of these years.
Okay, okay.
He was going to be my choice, but I have another choice.
Okay, who you got?
And that choice will be Max Muncy, who already broke out last year from a skills standpoint. He was the Dodgers' best hitter through the time they traded for Manny Machado. And then after they got Manny Machado, they decided, well, we don't need you anymore, Max Muncy. You're just going to start against right-handed pitchers, which was crazy because at the time his numbers against lefties was even better than righties. They still finished with very good numbers against lefties. Obviously a small sample. Maybe the Dodgers know something I don't. But it seemed unfair for a guy who looks like he has I don't even know that there's a good modern comparison for the on-base ability plus the power. I don't know, like it kind of reminds me of like a Brian Giles or something going back that far. Like if he's an everyday player and is legitimately as good as he looked last year, he's top five at first base. So I'm reluctant to draft him because I'm not that confident he's going to play every day. But the best case scenario is very sunny.
Okay, Max Muncy is Scott's breakout, and Chris, your breakout.
Matt Olson. I think he just needs to get like 10% better, and he's a star. Now it'll be hard in that park. That's another one that does give me a little pause, but it hasn't totally killed him yet. And you know, he's one of the elite exit velocity guys in baseball. Was fifth in the majors in percentage of home run or balls hit harder than 95 miles per hour. Promising plate discipline signs, especially when you get into the swing level stuff. Improved his contact rate, cut his rate of swinging at pitches out of the zone. He just needs to get a little bit better to be really, really good.
Matt Olson, believe it or not, was the number 8 first baseman in points leagues, number 11 in Roto.
And Sounds like it was already pretty good.
Yeah, but he really wasn't. And he hit 29 home runs, 14 at home, 15 on the road. The batting average, though, was 40 points lower at home. And my favorite stat about Matt Olson, 2017, he was amazing. 24 homers in 59 games. He had 49 hits in 2017, and 24 of them were home runs.
What's weird about Matt Olson, I swear, his ADP is higher this year than last year.
Yeah, you're right. Round 9. Right after Daniel Murphy and right before Max Muncy and Edwin Encarnacion for Matt Olson. That's
really
strange.
Daniel Murphy might be the breakout pick.
We'll
save that for the second base show.
Yeah, well, you might never know where you're going to play him. All right, so the breakouts. Muncy for Scott, Gallo for Heath, Olson for Chris. Heath, give me a bust.
It's so hard with ADP, but because it does seem like the first basemen are falling farther than they did last year in a lot of regards. Except for Olson. And I like Olson, so I'm going to say Jesus Aguilar. I'm just a little bit concerned.
Stole mine.
I stole yours. I think there's a little bit of reason to be concerned about what happened to him in the second half, and then there's a little bit of reason to be concerned with the Brewers about what happens to his playing time if that happens at the start of the first half. They've still got a lot of good players there.
All right, Jesus Aguilar, a bust for Heath and Chris. Scott, who's a bust?
Edwin Encarnacion. I got into it a little bit already. In addition to the declining plate discipline numbers, which would seem to be an indicator of age and being old, he's going to be playing in a pitcher's park for the first time in his career after always being in very favorable hitting environments. Like you said, Adam, his career numbers in Seattle, which is, I don't think it's called Safeco anymore. I think it's T-Mobile something. But his career numbers are pretty good. But, you know, obviously that's not the same as playing there regularly as a 36-year-old with declining plate discipline numbers.
Sure. Oh, so I didn't know Safeco was gone. It's a very shocking day for me.
Yeah, it was such a, you know, felt so safe always being able to cite it off memory.
We're going to go through ADP as much as we can. Before we do that, just want to let everybody know.
I think Chris had another pick.
Go ahead, Chris.
He stole his.
Who's your bust?
Ian Desmond is going in the 12th round.
In Roto.
He doesn't deserve to play Major League Baseball.
He's 2020, I mean, though.
He's legitimately been one of the worst everyday players in baseball for 2 years running.
But that doesn't matter in fantasy because he was the number 8 first baseman in Roto last year. Number 11
but that
in
was
points.
With a 24% home run to fly ball rate when he didn't hit the ball very well.
I think he only had 2 home runs in the second half or something crazy.
If he steals 15 bases and hits 8 home runs, he's a non-factor.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not disagreeing, but he does show up higher in fantasy than you would think. Okay.
He's terrible, Adam.
Well, you know what's not terrible is playing on CBSSports.com. The Commissioner product is awesome. It's for real serious fantasy players. Or if you just, you know, if you're not serious, you can still have a great time playing on CBS Sports. But it's customizable. You play in different types of formats, your own stat categories, your own scoring by position. There's a very deep player pool. You can add your own player, your minor leaguers. We get emails, hey, can we add this guy? People I've never even heard of before. Advanced stats for the analytics savvy managers. You can build franchises, play Dynasty. We've gotten really good with Dynasty, and the in-app commissioner tools have gotten so much better. So the app's improved. The product's so great. Go to cbssports.com/FBT and start your league today. cbssports.com/FBT. In order to avoid having like an hour and 15 minute long podcast, we're a little later than usual on when we start ADP, but we did talk a lot about these guys. So I think we could talk more about draft value for a lot of these players. Goldschmidt, 18th overall. Freeman, 22nd overall. Your thoughts?
Both great values.
It's fine.
Anybody have Goldschmidt ahead of Freeman? Scott, you do?
I do. For the last 4 months last year, Paul Goldschmidt was the same Paul Goldschmidt as always, just he didn't run as much, but you know, that still meant a ton of power, good batting average.
And we're talking about Machado, Bryce Harper, obviously Javier Baez, we don't want over him. Trey Turner, Ronald Acuna, these guys all going ahead of Goldschmidt and Freeman. What do you think?
I would not take Acuna ahead of either of them.
I don't think I would either. I don't think so. No, I mean, it's happening so consistently that I'm afraid it's going to skew my judgment, but I'm trying to keep within myself on this.
I think I'd be fine with it.
Are you taking Lindor or your best first baseman?
Lindor.
I dropped Lindor behind Freeman.
In theory. The rubber hasn't met the road there yet.
I could actually
we'll see
them having very similar seasons, weirdly.
Here's the thing that I will say about Lindor and the first baseman. At the end of the first round, I am more likely to take one of the first basemen, which I think I'm the only one that will take them in the first round. But I was in a mock draft where we got to 17, and both the first basemen were still there, and Lindor was still there. And I took Lindor because it didn't feel as risky in the second round.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. All right, Rizzo is the third first baseman off the board. He's 34th overall. He's sort of on an island in round 3, Anthony Rizzo.
Very safe and almost exactly where I have him ranked.
Yeah, I have no concerns about his drop-off in production last year. I think he's the same Anthony Rizzo as always, and so that's good value.
Okay, the same Anthony Rizzo as always is a great hitter in points leagues, top 12 typically, more like top 20 overall hitter in Roto, but extremely safe, typical Anthony Rizzo. Then we've got Cody Bellinger and Rhys Hoskins. We are going to count Rhys Hoskins. He's only outfield eligible right now. He will be first base eligible after probably the first week of the season. Bellinger and Hoskins basically have the same ODP. Who do you prefer?
Hoskins.
Bellinger has more upside, but I'd probably be more likely to draft Hopkins.
I far prefer Hoskins. I think this is a little bit of a value for him. But
what happened?
Heath called him Hopkins.
No, I did.
Oh,
I keep calling you Heath. So yeah, the second time this podcast I've done that.
At least you know me.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is too soon for Bellinger. I'm good with him in the fifth, but this is too soon.
So, Chris, you like Hoffman here?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say a different name. What? Who is Rhys Hoskins? What do we expect from Rhys Hoskins? Kind of an interesting year last year.
I wonder how much trying to learn outfield and being arguably the biggest contributor to the worst defensive team in the history of Major League Baseball I wonder how much that affected him. Like, that's, it's not unreasonable to think he took that into the batter's box with him and still went out and hit 250 with 34 homers and what, 180 combined runs in RBI. So
yeah. And I remember it. I'm looking up the splits now, but I remember it being a really slow start, maybe for the reason you mentioned.
Yeah.
I think you should expect a lot of dongs, runs and RBI and better offense.
He's a great start. He's one of those players, though, that seems more valuable in head-to-head than Roto because good on-base skills, but not looking like a good source of batting average. But, man, Chris's point about the defense. For a guy who reached base at a 354 clip last year and had 34 home runs, his WAR was 0.5 because he was so bad in left field.
And it was a little better on Fangraphs, but they still had him as minus 18 runs, which is horrendous.
Okay, so that's round four. It's Goldschmidt and Freeman in round two, Rizzo in round three, Bellinger and Hoskins in round four. Then we go all the way to round six. There's somebody we have not talked about, the most controversial player on this show every year, I feel. Joey Votto, not him, Matt Carpenter. They're going in round six. Votto, Carpenter. Like, how about round six and seven? Which one of these is not like the other? Votto, Carpenter, Abreu, Jesus Aguilar.
Aguilar is by far the least likely to be drafted on my team. I don't think I'm going to have a single share of him this year.
Right. I'll come back to him in a second. But what do you think about Votto, about Carpenter with Votto and Abreu?
I think there's a lot more risk with Carpenter. He's actually on my bust list. I think there's performance risk. I think there's health risk. There's age risk.
He's younger than Votto.
Sure, but with his body breaking down, I think he's probably closer to a decline than Votto is.
He was the best of this group last year. He had a down 2017 that we spent 6 months telling you was a fluke. I think Matt Carpenter is going to be awesome again.
I think the risk is mostly priced in because we've seen what the upside is, and it's a top, 15 hitter?
If the best version of Matt Carpenter should be third at first base.
Well, I don't know about that because the best version of Joey Votto is better.
It's certainly a top 15 hitter in points leagues. He's probably going, I mean, we don't have the data. He's probably going round 4 or 5 on average in points leagues.
But the thing about this group is the best version of Joey Votto and Matt Carpenter is probably better than the best version of Anthony Rizzo, probably better than the best version of Cody Bellinger and Rhys Hoskins. And so that's where you get the potential for real league-winning value in this group.
But when are we going to get the best version of Carpenter? Because we haven't yet. We got it for a three-month stretch in the middle of last year.
No, he did not.
For the whole season.
Yes, he did. His whole season was great.
What was his batting average?
His whole season was really, really good. He was a top 15 or 20 hitter.
Yeah, okay. So if your best season is 15th in points, 22nd in Roto, I mean, that's good.
That's not more upside than Anthony Rizzo for doing that.
No. His best season was probably like a top five hitter.
I'm not sure if that's true in Roto.
Well, that's the thing with Carpenter. Like, normally Carpenter's not that good in Roto. This is what I always try to say because his batting average is not good. He doesn't drive in a lot of runs because he bats leadoff or second. He doesn't usually hit that many home runs. He had 36 last year. That was a huge outlier for him. He doesn't steal bases.
Yeah. So we were hoping he could hit for that kind of power. But
I don't think we can look back at the pre-2015 version of Carpenter and all the home run concerns. Like, he's given us now, even if you just look at the last 2 years, of over a 42% hard contact rate and over a 46% fly ball rate. That is a home run hitter.
But
that
he's
is a guy that's going to hit 30 home runs.
He's greatly sacrificed batting average to do that, so I'm not sure it really helped him in Roto that much. I mean, last year he had 257.
I mean, it definitely did.
Year before, 241.
Well, is this a good spot for him in between Votto and Abreu?
I'll just wait until somebody takes Joey Votto and then take Matt Carpenter.
I would rather have Abreu. I would rather not have a clear injury risk who is going to sink my batting average.
I mean, he's never had testicular torsion.
and the thing with Carpenter is, yes, I think the perception of him is that he's not typically a great Roto player, but he's been a very good Roto option in two of the last 4 years.
He's been a fine Roto option, but he's not a standout.
He was top 20
last year. He was a standout last year, but
22nd, by the way.
Sorry.
Hitter.
With an outlier home run total, and maybe he can do it again, but there's just so much anxiety attached to Carpenter all the time. Like, who needs that in your life?
He hit 28 in 2015 with like a billion doubles.
All right, let's wrap
it on
him.
21 in 130 games in 2016. I don't think there's that much of, like, it's an outlier of maybe 6 or 7 home runs, which that happens for a lot of guys.
Okay, so that's Carpenter. Let's see. Jesus Aguilar here. He did have a bad second half, 245, 324, 436, but he also hits the crap out of the ball two straight years. What's not legit about him, about Jesus Aguilar?
I think Heath said it best earlier. I mostly believe in the skill set, but I don't believe in the Brewers necessarily sticking with him if he's not his very best, and he wasn't in the second half last year. And he's just not proven enough, and they have a lot of alternatives.
Okay, then let's move on, because we do not think Jesus Aguilar should go in the 7th round. Then there's nobody in the 8th round. Then we have Joey Gallo in the 9th round, Daniel Murphy and Matt Olson and Max Muncy all in this round. Joey Gallo, Daniel Murphy, Matt Olson, and Max Muncy. It's another pretty interesting group here. What do you guys think of it? I'll say it one more time. Gallo, Murphy, Olson, Muncy.
Round 9 might just be the best time to draft a first baseman. I love all of these guys. I think all of them could be legitimately great.
Who's your favorite, guys?
Probably Murphy.
Yeah, who are the other ones again?
Yeah.
Murphy?
Gallo, Murphy, Olson, and Muncy.
I would say Murphy. Yeah, I mean, I'm factoring in the second base eligibility there.
That's the thing is, I have a really hard time believing I'm going to end up playing Murphy at first base. But Muncy is actually my favorite.
Yeah, I don't know that I look at this group and I say round 9 is the time to draft the first baseman. I wouldn't mind getting them as the second first baseman that I've drafted. You know, playing them at utility or, you know, who has outfield eligibility? Gallo has outfield eligibility.
And Murphy has third base.
Daniel Murphy?
I like these guys.
Muncy.
Second base for Murphy.
I like these guys, but I do feel like it's getting risky. I mean, it is getting risky. They all have downside.
I would have a hard time taking Olson in round 9 when Edwin Encarnacion's going as late as he is.
Yeah, we haven't said his name yet. He's going in round 10. I think after Encarnacion in round 10, I'll say who's being drafted through the first 10 rounds. Goldschmidt, Freeman, Rizzo, Bellinger, Hoskins, Votto, Carpenter, Abreu, Aguilar, Gallo, Murphy, Olson, Muncy, Encarnacion. That's like 14 or 15 guys. I think after that, we're going to be like very hesitant to have any of these guys as our starting first baseman, except maybe Carlos Santana in a points league. Do you think Encarnacion should go ahead of Aguilar, Gallo, Murphy, Olson, Muncy?
Just Olson.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm with you. Sorry.
And the reason I like that round 9 group is that's kind of the last part of the draft where I like the potential for these guys until really we get into the final picks.
So we're really down on Encarnacion. Like, if you're taking Max Muncy ahead of him, a guy who has pretty much no track record compared to Encarnacion, who has one of the best track records in baseball. You know, that I'm not disagreeing, but that is quite a statement.
Yeah. I'm not totally sure about that. One thing, like, I think Encarnacion makes a difference for format too, because, you know, the walk rate is declining, but it's still pretty good. And he's not much help in batting average, so it's harder to justify him in the format his ADP is based around. I think it's justifiable for him to drop that far in this format. But he'd go earlier in a points league. He should.
And Carlos Santana was the number 16 first baseman in Roto last year. He was number 5 in points, and he had 229. So he had more walks than strikeouts. Carlos Santana is so good in points leagues. And would you take him over Aguilar, Gallo, Murphy, Olson, Muncy, Encarnacion in specifically a points league?
I'd take him over Olson in a points league.
I have him ahead of Olson. That's the only one.
Really?
Otherwise, I have him at the end of
I would definitely take him over Aguilar.
Okay.
They're in the same tier, so it's like really it's going to depend who's left for me, but technically I rank him lower.
All right, we got this big group here now, starting in round 11 and later. We're about 15 first basemen in. And I just want to know who you guys like. They don't have to be your starter by any means. Some of these guys don't even have to be your first baseman. Jurickson Profar, Ian Desmond, Eric Hosmer, Miguel Cabrera, Luke Voit. Let's start there with those five. Profar, Desmond, Hosmer, Cabrera, Voit.
I'm going to mostly avoid this group.
I think Hosmer's the only one I've drafted so far, which is weird to say.
You know, this kind of gets to what we were saying about the way depth works at first base. I don't, except for maybe Desmond, I don't hate any of this group. And even Desmond, I could see if I just really got boxed out on stolen bases, just throwing up my hands and hoping that the power's not so bad. But, I mean, one guy we haven't talked about at all is Miguel Cabrera, and there's still, I think, reason to be optimistic he can have a bounce-back season. His last two seasons were wrecked by injury, and he still had a great batted ball profile that lends itself to a high batting average. And, he could surprise a lot of people this year. If he's playing DH and able to stay on the field, he hasn't fallen enough yet where I'm willing to roll the dice on him, but I think one day this March that draft will come.
I've rolled the dice on him because I think if you play in a shallow league where you only have to roster one first baseman, Miguel Cabrera might not get drafted. You could take him super late. He's got a 16th round ADP on Fantasy Pros, and I just think I'm not expecting a ton of home runs, but I do think he's going to have a good batting average when he plays, and late round batting average is hard to find. All right, so that group was Profar, Desmond, Hosmer, Miggy, and did I say Luke Voit?
You did.
In that group? Okay,
you
Luke
did.
Voit. We know,
you know
Scott
I like
likes.
Him. Yep. And nobody else does. That's why I keep getting him.
Carlos Santana, Jose Martinez, Yuli Gurriel, Peter Alonso, and Justin Smoke. Santana, Jose Martinez, Gurriel, Alonso, and Smoke.
I'm most likely to draft Peter Alonso in this group.
Yeah.
I think it might be Yuli for me.
They all have playing time concerns, kind of under the radar playing time concerns.
Although, Sandy Alderson still the Mets GM?
No.
Who is it?
Brody Van Wagenen.
Ah, Van
Brody,
agent.
He said, I think fairly recently, that he still expects Peter Alonso to be their opening for dead
yep,
first base.
That would be his choice, too.
And if that happens, I think he probably needs to go
much
five,
earlier.
Six rounds
yeah.
earlier than
I mean,
this.
He's earned 80 grades for his power, which is the highest.
Yeah.
80 grades are rarely handed out.
Yeah, I don't think there's, in terms of skill set coming up as a prospect, I don't think there's that big of a difference between him and Rhys Hoskins. And
yeah.
we were very excited about Rhys Hoskins when he got called up.
Yeah.
Alonso, 24 years old, could be the Mets opening day first baseman, had a 940 career OPS in the minors, and 114 walks to 221 strikeouts in 255 games for power hitter. Very impressive. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's that group. Gurriel, Heath mentioned, you can get some batting average from him. And he's been pretty good with runs and RBIs because he hits usually in the middle of the order. He might bat like sixth for the Astros, which is pretty good. And he's been very good with runners in scoring position for what that's worth. Next group, somebody I'm very interested in. I'll tell you who later. Josh Bell, Tyler White. I think we like this group, at least some of it. Josh Bell, Tyler White, Jake Bowers, CJ Cron, Trey Mancini. I'll say it now. I'm really interested in Tyler White. Like, I know he had a terrible month in September. Terrible.
Right.
But I want to gamble on Tyler White.
He's a very interesting player because if he didn't have that bad finish in September, I think he would probably be drafted among the top 15 first basemen right now. He looks like the guy who's going to take over DH now that Evan Gattis is out. In Houston, he's always had great minor league numbers. And, you know, even with that September, last year's numbers look pretty good. It's just how quick of a hook will the Astros have with him? Kyle Tucker is still looking for a way in the lineup. If Tyler White performs, it could be why Yuli Gurriel ends up not being an everyday player anymore because they still have to find a spot for Kyle Tucker. So, It's going to be interesting to see the way that plays out, but in theory, White looks like a mixed league caliber bat.
Yeah, so Bell, Tyler White, Jake Bowers, three guys that, you know, at least one of us seems to like as a late-round pick. And then I think we can call it a day here. Scott and I are going to be back on Tuesday, and we can talk maybe a little bit more about these guys. I just, honestly, if Brandon Belt plays a full season, he's probably going to be a top 15 points first baseman. He's very good in that format, and he's basically free.
Just very worried about concussions with him.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not getting him for a full year. But if your first baseman gets hurt in a points league, go to the waiver wire and get Brandon Belt. And, yeah, that's it. That was a good preview. That was first base. Please email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I expect to have two more position previews next week. Chris and Heath are sort of out of the office, so Scott and I will be doing on Tuesday and Thursday probably some mailbags and other topics. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Thank you, guys. Chris, Heath, Scott, have a great weekend, everybody. We will talk to you with a fresh episode on Tuesday.
See you later. Justin Bohr.